16 and 7 members. Because of the double line, and because we have the oxygen in here, we knocked down the icebergs, so we didn't have the side chain gone, so the side chain was on one side versus the other, so we have two isomers. It's 3D isomer, that's more accurate. The inhibitor for serotonin E as far as the norepinephrine, so if they're marketing a mixture, it's not a 50-50 mixture, and then effectively we end up inhibiting the uptake of both serotonin and norepinephrine. Again, if you look at the fact that it's a tertiary amine, that's what you would expect, tertiary amines end up inhibiting both. And the last one that's classified as a tricyclic is one of the newer compounds. It's related to a compound that we'll see soon that will become the antipsychotics. If you put a methyl group here, you get a compound that blocks dopamine receptors. So the compound without the methyl that has a hydrogen here is a compound that's used as an antidepressant. We put it in with the tricyclics usually, so you do have three rings here. Different than the other compounds in essentially the shape of the ring, the others we have the two carbons of carbon and oxygen up here, and then just one group down here, so now we've got two down here. The fact that we don't have a methyl here makes it similar to having like a secondary amine, so it's again more selective for inhibiting the reuptake of norepinephrine. And this just shows the relationship to the diazepam, benzodiazepine type compounds. So if you look at this part of the molecule, you see it looks something like what we saw with the benzodiazepine, aromatic ring with the halogen, 7-member ring, it's really got oxygen, nitrogen versus the nitrogen. This was an aromatic ring, this is not. If you look at the ionization of the molecule, you would expect it's this nitrogen out here that you want to be bromated, just based on distance. CPS question. Structure as opposed to a mechanism of action. when the first big group of compounds came on the market were the SSRIs, which is a compound that are a lot more selective for blocking the serotonin reuptake, so it didn't affect the other ones. So this is showing the tricyclics, and again, essentially looking at the tertiary amines here. So blocking the muscarinic and the histamine, the alpha 1 receptors, will affect on membrane stabilization, just cause side effects and toxicity. They won't consider to contribute to the therapeutic effect. We don't want those interactions. The mechanisms that were considered important were, again, blocking the reuptake of norepinephrine and the serotonin. Covered the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, that were blocking the metabolism of serotonin and norepinephrine, but also dopamine. So the newer compounds can differ as to which neurotransmitters are affected. So we have compounds that will be selected for blocking the reuptake of serotonin. We have compounds that block the serotonin and norepinephrine, but we don't have all these other side effects at the therapeutic doses. The buprenorphine blocks the norepinephrine and the dopamine. And then we've got other compounds that also can affect receptors in addition to affecting the reuptake. A little bit of background on the development of the SSRIs. Once they identified that they wanted to block the reuptake of compounds like serotonin and norepinephrine, they were able to isolate the genes that were involved in these transport proteins and identify the sequence of the amino acids and what the actual three-dimensional shape was. So then they can try and develop structural activity relationships for new compounds that will be more selectively just inhibit one target as opposed to several targets. It shows the similarity between the serotonin and norepinephrine transporters. Even though ideally they are trying to compound that are selective, they can't necessarily predict ahead of time which compound is, which transporter will be affected. But this is just trying to emphasize the fact that they are very similar to one another. So when you have the transport proteins, they have this common structure where they cross the membrane 12 times. Those are the hydrophobic regions. They'll have loops that are on the extracellular site, which will be where the drug will be binding. And if you notice, there isn't that much difference when you look at the schematic. Then intracellular, you have sites for phosphorylation, both the end of the C-terminal or intracellular. I did show you the structure for the dopamine transporter, but it's actually very similar to these also. There is a little bit of difference once they're incorporated through the membrane. That's what this one is showing. If you're going to transport compounds, you normally couple that with transport of something else. So this is looking at the serotonin transporter. When it's transported intracellularly, you have the potassium that's being transported outside. Versus the norepinephrine one, you have the norepinephrine here. Coming inside. In this case, the potassium isn't transported outside, but it is interacting with the transport protein. Site of action for our antidepressants is indicated. We're going to be blocking those transporters so we can't transport the serotonin or the norepinephrine. Cocaine can also do the same type of thing. The compounds that are antidepressants are considered to be competitive inhibitors of those transporters. order to study them, they essentially made assays that would be similar to an enzyme assay. So what they did is they isolated the pumps by homogenizing regions that were rich in the pumps. And then if you put these into a membrane, you will have some, the membrane will be pumped fluid so you can transport the compounds across the membrane. And then by using radioactive serotonin, you can measure the uptake, how much is transported across the membrane. So it's just like doing an enzyme assay where you can measure the binding and reaction. In this case, instead of something happening to the serotonin, it is changing where it's localized. This is a review article by Medscape that is essentially looking at, when we look at all these antidepressants, does it matter whether they target serotonin or norepinephrine or target both? So they're looking at pros and cons. First big group we're going to be looking at are the ones that target serotonin. Because again, these came on the market, they largely displaced the tricyclics. Initial treatment of things like depression. So these are some of the behaviors that are modulated by serotonin. So notice that you don't just have depression with sleep. And the other thing to remember is there's seven different types of serotonin receptors. If we block the pumps, we're essentially increasing the amount of serotonin that's available to all seven types of receptors. So even though we don't see side effects due to the interaction with a lot of other receptors themselves, we see side effects because we have serotonin acting on other categories of serotonin receptors that we don't necessarily want to stimulate. So things like movement regulation is involved in depression, fear and anxiety. We mentioned a lot of the SSRIs are used for the treatment of anxiety. When you're looking at especially long term type of use. But again, other things. Schematic to work the serotonin ones, similar to what we covered previously with the norepinephrine. The tryptophan is the amino acid that's transported into the neuron. And we oxidize the 5 position, convert it to the serotonin, incorporate it into the vesicles. The vesicle will be released with the nerve impulse. So again, the problem here is you're interacting with all the different categories of serotonin receptors. It doesn't know which one you want to interact with. As I mentioned, some of them have subcategories. Termination of the effect of the serotonin is by reuptake primarily, and then the reuptake incorporated back into vesicles or metabolizer. Of the 7 types of serotonin receptors, 6 of them are G-protein coupled receptors. The only one that isn't is the 5-HT3 receptor. That's an ion channel. It's a ligand gated because the ligand is the serotonin. So even though they're G-protein coupled, they can differ in the secondary messengers. They usually focus on in the treatment of depression are the 1 and the 2. So 1 is coupled with the cyclic AMP, and 2 with the IP3 phosphomycetone. They didn't get their name because they didn't cause much inhibition of the reuptake of the norepinephrine. The important thing here is just because we don't directly target a neurotransmitter doesn't mean it's not effective. The just remember that all of the antidepressants take a couple weeks to produce their effect. So when you change one neurotransmitter, it impacts on other ones. So chronic administration of these compounds do cause downregulation in norepinephrine receptors. They don't have as much effect on the acetylcholine receptors or the alpha-1 receptors or histamine receptors, so a lot fewer side effects than the tricyclic antidepressants do. This is showing the effect on different types of receptors. The main thing here with the red aroma, these are the compounds that we refer to as the SSRI compounds. And then notice that the effect on the reuptake of serotonin is occurring at much lower concentrations than our effect on norepinephrine or dopamine. So again, we end up being fairly selective for just blocking the serotonin pumps. This is as opposed to tricyclics or metformin. Was able to block the reuptake of serotonin, but it also blocked the norepinephrine, essentially at the same type of therapeutic dose, and here's all the side effects. And the desipramine was methyl. Well, metformin would be your secondary amine. It's more effective because it's blocking the norepinephrine before it blocks the serotonin. That's typical of secondary tricyclics. They're fairly selective for blocking norepinephrine. Notice where the dopamine pump is on these compounds and block the scale. There's the dopamine way out here. So these compounds are not affecting the reuptake of dopamine. This one is looking at the selectivity. You have a value of 0.1, it would indicate that it's equal in activity for serotonin and norepinephrine. When you look at the secondary tricyclics, a lot more selective than blocking norepinephrine. Here's the SSRIs out here. So they're more selective than blocking the reuptake of serotonin. We have the clomipramine. Remember when it's metabolized is the compound where you took the methyl off of it. So it's more selective in blocking serotonin, but the desmethyl compound is blocking norepinephrine, so then in effect when you use it, you end up blocking both. And the same thing with your other tricyclic compounds. Usually when we talk about these activities and we're looking at the reuptake, the fact that they block the serotonin reuptake pump, in order for the compounds to produce the therapeutic effect, you have to inhibit somewhere between 60% and 80% of those pumps. Compounds can also bind to a number of serotonin receptors, so that they don't bind only to the pumps. And that can affect the side effects of the compounds. Again, remember with the compounds, it's not just increasing the amount of neurotransmitter that gives you the mechanism of action. You have downregulation of receptors, and you have an increase in the synthesis of the brain-derived neurotrophic factor as far as why it takes so long to produce the effect. Part two, again, Prozac was the first one on the market and promoted a lot, mood writer, not just people that were severely depressed, maybe depressive disorders, but because it didn't have major side effects, why did we use? I haven't double checked as far as the list that's listed here, but so you don't have to worry about distinguishing which one is to which. But the point of this one is the compounds are going to be used not only in the treatment of depression, but also anxiety orders, GAD or your generalized anxiety disorders, obsessive compulsive disorders, bulimia, premenstrual dysphoric disorders. SAD is the social anxiety disorders. Panic disorders. Again, a lot of the use of the compounds is different types of anxiety disorders as opposed to depression. When you look at these compounds, they're going to be different from one another chemically. They're not like the tricyclics where we could look at a whole series of compounds with just minor changes. Minimal structural features we need are listed here. You think in terms of what you're blocking the reuptake of. You're looking at blocking serotonin, or in the case of the norepinephrine ones, the norepinephrine. Both cases, you have the nitrosamine, and you've got your two carbon chain, and you've got a basic nitrogen. So when you look at the inhibitors, you're going to have an aromatic system. You're going to have an aliphatic nitrogen. You're going to have the proper distance between the two groups. There isn't any generalization that we have based on this that's going to tell us which transporter we're including. Whether it's serotonin, norepinephrine, or dopamine. When we get into some of the individual compounds, we can see that making small changes which transporter is inhibited. But the generalization doesn't tell you. Yeah, the first one we're going to talk about is fluoxetine, and a super question. Fluoxetine was the first SSRI to be marketed. It's marketed as two different dosage forms here. The Prozac was the one that was used for depression, and later on they got it approved for the premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And you know, looking at specific conditions, people don't necessarily want to say, well, I need to be with an antidepressant, so come up with a different name for the compound. The main thing is you don't want a person taking both of the products. Relatively simple molecule. Here's our basic nitrogen. We have a secondary amine, which is our metabolism will be to remove the methyl to give us the primary amine. And we've got proper distance. We have two aromatic systems here. Ask you about the number of isomers. When we look at the action of the compound, you need to consider the action of, mechanism. Is there a difference in action, one isomer versus another? then also in terms of the metabolism. And in terms of getting these compounds, they basically screen them against the pumps. So once they figured out how to isolate the pumps and to do things that were similar to the enzyme inhibition, they basically took the compounds that they had made for other purposes and they started screening everything. So you want something to inhibit the pump and not to inhibit all these other receptors. So that's how the compounds were selected. And they marketed the compounds. Usually they got compounds that are fairly specific. So we don't see, again, a lot of modification of the compounds when we start, say, changing this trichloromethyl and putting a lot of different other substitutions at that place. They kind of optimize the activity for the compound that was marketed. So we're looking at the product that's marketed is the receiving mixture. I already mentioned we take the methyl off the nitrogen. We have three compounds that are active as pump inhibitors. The R and the S isomers are both active. And then the S-nor metabolite is also active. The R metabolite is relatively inactive. We also have to consider drug interactions. The R isomers are weaker inhibitors of cytochrome P2D6. There's been proposals that the R isomer would be a better drug. They show their active compound and its metabolite would be inactive, and so you'd be able to control the activity better. Fluoxetine is considered to be a fairly potent inhibitor of the cytochrome P2D6. Ben came to this afternoon and talked about tamoxifen, which is a compound that blocks estrogen receptors. And one of the things they're looking at is metabolism by 2D6. We use that to form the active metabolite. If people have a genetic deficiency in the enzyme, the drug is much less effective, maybe ineffective. They haven't really figured out what happens if a person's on a drug that's inhibiting the enzyme. Are they going to lose the effectiveness of the tamoxifen? And the fluoxetine was one of the compounds that they were looking at. This is looking at the inhibition of the three types of transporters. So the receiving compound, the R and the S isomer separately, and the metabolites. Points to make here is the compounds are fairly selected for the serotonin pump. Notice these compounds are all active. The R nor metabolite, again, is much less active. And then essentially you're not seeing the inhibition of the norepinephrine or the dopamine pumps. So that's how you should be getting out of that slide. Metabolite, fluoxetine, again, is also an inhibitor of the cytochrome P2D6, particularly the S isomer. You also have to worry about inhibition of other cytochrome enzymes, so 3A, 3 and 4. Metabolites accumulate when you're looking at chronic administration. Again, compounds are on a PRN basis. Don't take them for a dose or two thinking you're treating your depression and then, wait a couple of days to take another dose. You have to take them on a continuous basis. Your metabolite accumulates. This shows the difference between the parent compound versus the metabolite. Fluoxetine's half-life is 2 to 4 days, which is fairly long for a compound. But notice the norfluoxetine, like 2 weeks. This is very important, like when you're starting and stopping the compound. If a person had been on fluoxetine and you want to put them on a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, you need to wait at least 5 days to get rid of the fluoxetine because of this very long half-life. This is looking at specifically, again, inhibition from 2B6. Again, the non-metabolite, this is as potent as the inhibitor, and the R isomers are as potent. Again, that would be an advantage. We don't really want to be inhibiting the cytochrome 2B6. This is looking at the accumulation of the compound, chronic administration. The fluoxetine is the one that's on the bottom, and then the other SSRIs are what's shown on the top. So with both of these, if you look at them, you reach your therapeutic concentration within the first week. And if you discontinue the compound, you can wash them over and die within a week or so. Versus with the fluoxetine, because of the long half-life of the parent compound and the metabolite. It takes a long period of time to reach steady state. And if you discontinue the compound, you get extremely long time to get rid of the nor-fluoxetine metabolite. So the person would respond rapidly because they haven't built up therapeutic concentrations here. And then it takes longer to get rid of it and if you want to switch to another compound. Next one we're looking at is the paroxetine. The question here is what kind of relation is for that. You've got a ring structure, so you can have cis and trans isomers. And then these are both chiral centers, so you have both types of isomers. So you essentially have four isomers with the compound. And as you might expect, the four isomers would differ from one another in activity and side effects and so on. So this one is specifically marketed as a single isomer. Compound is metabolized, oxidation and conjugation. This one has one of the shorter durations of action, and that's actually a disadvantage when you want to use a compound on chronic administration. So you've got a person who built up to therapeutic plasma levels, and then all of a sudden they just continue it. You get a lot of shift in what's happening. So you can see symptoms on discontinuation, things like sleep disturbances. So the net effect is you want to taper a person off of the doses rather than abruptly discontinuing it. This discontinuation syndrome can occur if a person's received the drug for 3 to 4 weeks. It's not like they have to have received it for a year or so. So if they've been on it for any length of time, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, they go off. Sertraline was the third one. Yeah, marketed as a single isomer. Yeah, there's two carbon centers, so we've got four possible isomers. And again, when you look at them, they don't look like one another. You're starting out with the secondary amine, so one of the amounts of metabolism is the DNA alkylation. Not a very potent compound as far as an SSRI or as far as also including enzymes. The ND alkylated metabolite does have a longer half-life than the parent compound. The parent compound is about 24 hours. Metabolites up to 100 hours. Metabolites only about 1/10 as active as a pump inhibitor. So it's not considered to be clinically significant as far as contributing to the therapeutic effect. Then the next one is the cetaloprim, and this is also marketed specifically as the S isomer. So initially they marketed it as a racemic mixture. In the racemic mixture, it's the S isomer that essentially is active. The R one is essentially inactive. So when they went to the Lexapro, they're marketing just the active compound. This is showing the rationale for separating the isomers, and most of the activity is due to the S isomer. The R isomer didn't have activity, essentially, but it doesn't mean it doesn't do anything in the body, so it could be contributing to things like side effects. If you have it, you have to metabolize it to get rid of it. So essentially, there wasn't any benefit to having it present. So S isomer is preferred. This is looking at the activity of the racemic mixture, and then the isomers, and then the metabolites. So again, selectivity for the serotonin pumps. S isomer is producing most of the effect of the compound. You know, this racemic mixture is a little bit less active. The R isomer is much less active than the S. And when you look at the activity of the metabolites, again, the desmethyl metabolite is less active, still has action. And the desmethyl R isomer, again, is essentially much less active. Again, we're not blocking the reuptake of norepinephrine or serotonin, norepinephrine or dopamine of the compound. So it's just comparing the racemic mixture versus the S isomer, and essentially what we're saying is, again, you can't just say, well, if I use a receiving mixture, half of it's the active compound, so I could make it exchange. And again, the main thing is the S isomer is more active, it's considered to be more effective, has less side effects. So the company could make a big marketing campaign based upon that. We're just trying to show the effectiveness. Again, the main thing is the S isomer ended up being more effective than the preceding mixture. Again, what they're trying to show here is the advantage of the SI interrupt, which is the yellow, compared to the kind of green, which is the preceding mixture. Again, SI is more effective. Generalized anxiety, same type of thing, both compounds, the RIS isomer, are metabolized by removing the methyl groups, so you can remove one and then both. Again, they're looking at differences potentially in the metabolism of the two compounds. So, again, advantage of the S isomer has fewer side effects. You can use a lower dose, so you're not going to see that interaction with other receptors. And it has less affinity for the serotonin receptors, more selective for the pump. Compound is probably one of the best ones as far as positive drug interactions due to inhibition of the cytochrome P450 metabolic enzymes. There isn't much difference between the two. Fluvoxamine was used in other countries, like in Europe, for a long period of time before it was used much in the United States. Initially, they were only looking at using it for obsessive compulsive disorders. Recently, it's been marketed in this controlled release form. And it's been approved for the treatment of the social anxiety disorders. Differs from the other compounds, and it doesn't have a chiral center. And essentially, the metabolites end up being inactive. If you look at the structure, it's like the others. These are basic nitrogen, primary amine, and the proper distance to the aromatic group. Just somebody's being treated with an SSRI, would you expect all these compounds to be similar as far as the therapeutic effect? How many think yes? And how many think no? Maybe we can see a whole lot of hands at this point. So we're going to see the yes question. Yes or no? How many think yes? And then we say no.
Yes.
One, I assume. Okay. What's the question? Are the SSRIs essentially therapeutically equivalent to one another? In other words, the person will respond equally to whichever agent you look at. Yes is one, and no is two. Lexapro. essentially with all the lotion put in the area because of side effects, things like just GI, feeling nausea, and so on. She's finally been not stabilized. She receives the fluoxetine now, the controlled release one. So I didn't really think before I found her work after the three others hadn't worked and looked at similar mechanisms. And luckily, the controlled release came out just to the point where she was not being able to tolerate this one. And then things like feel a little anxious and, you know, sweating and so on. Controlled release one seems to be working. Question for CPS. We look at the metabolism of the compounds.
Side effects due to